Eternal Dragon.
Welcome to Smoking Section, a podcast by Eternal Dragons, a digital archive that emulates nicotine-filled rave break conversations to reflect on Asian diasporic identity, the arts, and culture. I'm your host, Miles, aka DJ Oyasumi. Today we're joined by EXO. EXO is Varen Cho, the Vietnamese-Canadian electronic producer, filmmaker, and visual artist who spends their time between their native Vancouver and Berlin. Their music focuses on disrupting gender binaries through audiovisual storytelling. EXO uses hyperfeminine masculine tropes and butterfly evolution allegories to build worlds exploring nuance in duality, transgressing codes of identity, and finding mutuality through cyclical emotions. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Miles. How are you doing?
Doing all right. What time is it? It's 9 in the evening. Nice to connect on the same coast, too.
Back in Vancouver.
Where would you say that you're based?
I would say it's like Vancouver's my hometown and I'm based in Vancouver, but like there's a part of me that's somewhat based in Berlin. I actually moved there a couple years ago, but because of COVID and all this stuff, I ended up moving back. But I still back and forth between there. Yeah.
Yeah. Are you planning to go back there again?
Yes, hopefully so, in 3 months from now.
What would you say it's like being, I know like Vancouver has a pretty big Asian population, so I'm kind of curious what it's like being Asian in Vancouver, like from your point of view.
I've been very lucky that Vancouver's always had this really big Asian population. So demographics-wise, it's like 41% Asian, and then there's also like another suburb outside of Vancouver called Richmond, which has the demographics of like 72% Asian, which is like pretty wild. Like the first one's like 2 out of 5 people, and the second one's like almost 4 out of 5. So anyway, growing up, I was exposed to like all sorts of authentic Asian food and culture through like school friends and the local community.
What kind of foods and like cultures did you encounter? What's the demographic makeup of Vancouver?
So for example, like when I was like super young, like I already knew what bubble tea was and I had sushi and things like this that were before they're like popular in public media as they are now. So we also had a lot of popular stuff from Asia, like, I don't know, sticker pictures, like night markets, Asian malls, as well as like we had Japanese festivals, Taiwanese festivals. There's also Lunar New Year celebrations, like all this stuff. It's like a melting pot of you know, the different demographics in Vancouver would be it's majorly Chinese, and then after that I think it's like East Indian and then Filipino, and then smaller demographics is like other Southeast Asian, like Vietnamese, as well as smaller populations of like Japanese and Korean folks. It's kind of amazing in that sense because you're just exposed to so many different Asian cultures all at the same time.
How have you thought about your identity as an Asian diasporic person? And what does that mean to you? Like, especially growing up in Vancouver, being exposed to all these different cultures?
I guess the first time I thought about being Asian must have been when I was about 10 years old or so. I don't know if you remember, but back then there was this social media platform called Asian Avenue. Have you heard of this?
I've heard.
It's kind of like MySpace, but for Asians. And yeah. So what the website was like you could decorate your own page using HTML and, you know, visually it would be pretty chaotic sometimes, kind of like MySpace. But then you could make friends with people, you could like add them, or else you could like write in their guest book, which used to be a thing. But anyways, it was like a great way to like make friends with Asian diaspora all over the world. And so, you know, as like a second generation immigrant of like Vietnamese descent born in Canada, growing up for me, I didn't really know very many Vietnamese people or like people my age in particular. So it was great to, you know, be under this umbrella term. And you know, find a community that I could be a part of. Actually, a lot of the early 2000s, like, Asian aesthetics also probably came from Asian Avenue as well.
It's the OG, it's the Genesis.
Yes. That and probably, like, I don't know, LimeWire music from there or something.
Do you know, like, the people that you talked to on Asian Avenue, like, where they were from?
Yes. 'Cause
you said, like, all over the world.
Well, it's funny because, like, I think it was, at least the people I connected with mostly were based in North America, but I had made friends within Canada. People in Vancouver, as well as, like, people in like central Canada. But luckily for me, you know, at that time, like, the internet was like fairly safe and everybody on there was like fairly young. Obviously the difference would be like me as like an elementary school student talking to like high school students who are like, oh, this is like cute, like like wholesome type vibes. Yeah. You know.
Yeah.
So I like made some like older sister, older brother kind of friends. Because the reason why is like me and my friends only knew about this site from my friend's older sister. And so it was from her older sister's generation that we were able to play around with this technology, I guess.
Do you remember what your page was
like?
Oh
my God.
What were you? Do you remember your username?
Okay, I was a big, Street Fighter fan at that time, and so I don't know if you remember the character Sakura. She's like the disciple or something of like Ryu, and she's kind of like the schoolgirl version of Ryu. So then my like username was like Lil Sakura, and Sakura also means like cherry blossom, of course.
Yeah. It's always the Lil.
Yeah, you gotta get the Lil in there, you know. But you know, I was being true to myself at the time, you know, I was Lil. Yeah. So
do you remember what your page looked
like? Oh yeah, like, gosh, yeah. Definitely there was a lot of GIFs, because at that time, you know, GIFs were really like a big thing. So everyone would just like collect GIFs and little, I don't know what they call it, but they're kind of like these bitmap characters that you could like make in MS Paint. And you can customize the characters in MS Paint if you just opened up this GIF in there and then redrew it. So it'd be like stuff like these little characters and like, you know, anime GIFs and, oh gosh.
Did you make your own like little character?
I did. I made those little characters. Actually, me and my cousins at the time, you know, we were all kind of collecting it and we were all on Asian Avenue at the same time, but we got like really protective over, like, our own gifts. Like, we all wanted to collect our own gifts and, like, keep it in some part of the computer that the other cousins couldn't find. And then we would have fights because, like, we'd be, like, accuse each other of stealing each other's gifts and stuff. You know, really,
it's like sticker collecting.
Exactly, it was like sticker collecting. It was really petty, but really funny. It's like, now thinking about it, it's just like, wow, just like collecting gifts and folders, that was such a thing at that time.
That's sick. How old are you?
I was like 10 years old, you know. I love that. My cousins were like a bit older. They're like maybe like 13, 14. Mm-hmm. So this is like the time we're just like doing all this type of stuff. And it was really, really fun, you know?
You're kind of getting exposed in that way to like culture through your cousins, but also through like older, like high schoolers as well.
And friends. Yeah, definitely. And you know, that was kind of interesting because I had learned about all this stuff. And then I had a short time where I like moved to Central Canada and like, I was living in the most, like, white neighborhood you could ever live in. And suddenly there was just zero, none of this.
Oh.
And so it's just, like, going from, like, one extreme to the other. But then I did end up coming back to Vancouver and just, like, suddenly being re-immersed in it.
What kind of stuff were people, like, sharing through Asian Avenue? Like, what kind of stuff did you discover or learn about?
Actually, I learned how to use HTML through Asian Avenue and make websites. And then I ended up making like a Final Fantasy VIII fan site.
Ooh. That's sick.
So I guess at that time, you know, I was learning this type of stuff, but it wasn't until like high school that I was like really, I came back to Vancouver before I was about to go to high school and end up going high school here. And that's when I started to learn about more stuff. Like, I guess, like, at that age, you're just, like, it was, like, the early 2000s, and there's just, like, so much media out there at that time that you're just starting to get into.
Segues nicely into talking about the mix that you did for us in 2017. For me, like listening through it, I was kind of thinking about how you draw upon all these different eras and like moments of Asian identity. And I was curious if you could talk a bit about your experiences with those different moments and you kind of identifying that is like preteen, like high school years that you're sort of encountering this music.
Yeah, for sure. If you listen to the mix, like the intro, there's like a lot of different snippets. And a lot of them, again, is from my youth. But from the very first PlayStation 1 game I ever played was like a demo disc that had Parappa the Rapper on it. So, you know, there's like snippets from that. And there's also, you know, some of my favorite Asian pop tracks by artists like BoA and Jay Chou and H.O.T. And then it's also like a snippet from like the first Final Fantasy I ever beat, which is like Final Fantasy VIII. And then there's like a part that's also like a nu metal part, which is like the intro of like Final Fantasy X when they play like Blitzball or something. And then there's like bits of like Dance Dance Revolution in it, Street Fighter, SFX, of course. And it's all on top of like a drone bed track, which is by Gang, who happens to run the music label PTP. So, you know, it's like, it's a blend of this past with my present interests of like experimental electronic artists and, you know, new edits and remixes of these old K-pop, J-pop, C-pop, or any song, or video game classics, and just, you know, deep YouTube finds of covers and film scores. But last but not least, of course, like friends I've met from both local and online through this umbrella of Asian diaspora.
I think what I appreciate about it is how much you're able to put into it. But I'm curious, like, there's so much. Like, how did you find out about, like, all this music?
Nowadays, all the new stuff, it's usually SoundCloud and YouTube digging. Or it's from, like, films I've seen. Or some of that stuff is just, like, asking musician friends of mine for new tracks they might be working on. But the old stuff are found through, you know, like I was said, from friends in high school talking about your favorite music when burnt CDs and MD players were popular, or like from video games I was playing or anime I was watching.
Can you give me some examples of like the songs, the anime that you were watching, or the different songs friends were sharing with you?
You know, I had only heard of Fei Wong through playing Final Fantasy VIII. Because she did the title theme song, Eyes on Me. And then stuff like Utada Hikaru was like one of the first Asian pop artists that I ever heard sing in English. Because she had that song, First Love, which was such an amazing song. But I was also I was just like so shocked at that time. I was like, whoa, I've never ever heard like an Asian pop song in English before. I don't know.
Yeah.
That was really cool. And, you know, of course, Ayumi Hamasaki is like the queen of J-pop, and she's like as big as Mariah Carey. So like you couldn't not know about her. And she also has the best trance hits, of course. So Crystal K has also been one of my favorites also. And, you know, she's just like the best mix of R&B and J-pop, like two genres that I like totally love. And I played her stuff a lot. And you can tell that because she's the only artist in the mix that I put in three times.
Yeah, there's a couple, yeah.
But yeah, my high school friends were the ones told me about like K-pop and C-pop artists like H.O.T. and Jay Chou and like Andy Lau, Kelly Chen. But also, you know, last but not least, my favorite composer of all time, maybe, is Yoko Kanno, who did the anime soundtracks for Macross Plus and Kids on the Slope, Terran Resonance, and all these other anime. She's actually more famously known for Cowboy Bebop, but that's not my favorite soundtrack.
What's your favorite soundtrack?
I would say I can't pick a soundtrack, but I could pick songs from different things. But you know, I do love her work on Macross Plus, and there is like a lot of magic on Kids on the Slope. Actually, a few years ago, I found a single of Crystal K's Eternal Memories at a yard sale at the Nikkei Center in Burnaby. And that's like the last song, or the second last song I put on the mix.
Whoa.
But it's actually one of my favorite songs of hers. And I just never realized, but it was produced by Yoko Kanno.
No way.
And yeah, it's so crazy because that when I realized this so late, and I was like, oh my god, that's just like kind of a really special moment and realization. Yeah. But maybe it happens kind of often because I was watching Kids on the Slope and I didn't know that Yoko Kanno composed the soundtrack. And there's this one particular moment near the end, like where there's this one track that plays and it really just blew me away. And I had to find the song online, but surely enough, you know, it was Yoko Kanno's work. And, you know, like moments like that feel really serendipitous.
Yeah. Do you remember when you first encountered Yoko Kanno? Which anime was it?
Actually the first time I encountered her work was off of YouTube.
Mm.
A friend of mine had shown me the song Pulse that she does on Macross Plus. And if you listen to that song, you'll know, like, I'm so influenced by that song in particular. but yeah, that track really, like, blew me away. Mm. And
what kind of elements of it, like, inspire you?
You know, at the time, I guess she was using a lot of breakbeat. And, you know, at that time, that was, like, kind of the new music. So in the film, it's supposed to be futuristic, so it utilizes, like, electronic music as a way of making this futuristic music for these mechas. And so there's, like, this also kind of this disembodied vocal that sounds really amazing as well. But, you know, I always love the combination of these kind of really ethereal sounding voices with this kind of really moving compositions and just really emotional music. And I can relate a lot because, like, the music I make can be quite emotional sounding.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely get the breakbeat influence.
Yeah, too. Definitely.
Yeah.
If you listen to that, you'll, like, understand a lot of my work, I feel.
Like, with the mix and all this different music, how did these moments inform, like, how you thought about your identity as an Asian diasporic person, as an Asian Canadian?
I'm just feeling thankful to have learned so much throughout the years and be surrounded by, you know, all these different things that I loved and have developed me into the person I am today. But, you know, like I said earlier, there was a time when suddenly I didn't have all of those things, and just the community online just became even more important in that sense and what I was doing online.
Mm.
When I think about the mix, it's so you know, when I first made this mix, I didn't think about how people would receive it, but it's so special because a lot of people actually did reach out and told me that they really related to it in a nostalgic mm-hmm. way, or it's given them a chance to experience that early 2000 Asian era for the first time.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's given them an opportunity to look into some different Asian artists, contemporary artists that they had never heard of before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like that was my experience was the one of like, oh, I didn't experience it before, and then now I'm listening to it all through this mix, and it's feels really nostalgic, even though it's not something that I experienced.
Totally. And I love
It's like really special. Yeah. It's cool how, like, people relate to it in different ways.
Exactly.
But it seemed like a lot of people were connecting with it.
Yeah, it's kind of like a weird time-melting time capsule.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, elements from the past and the present all combined into one.
mm-hmm. Something I was noticing, like, through listening to it was there's some covers that pop up. There's, like, a cover by Elise, and there's a cover by Miles, like, a drum cover, Miles Wong, and Elise Cloma. And, yeah, I'm just curious about your relationship to covers and to karaoke. I remember you, like, mentioned that your mom does karaoke a lot.
Yeah. I'm a big karaoke fan. One of my earliest photos at like 4 years old is of me in front of a karaoke TV on a like a little tricycle holding a microphone, of course. You know, it was such a big part of my life even at an early age, and I feel like, I don't know, for certain cultures maybe they can relate to this, but you know, karaoke is such a family thing that you would do.
Mm.
And if you did it a lot too, then I guess you would get better at it, I guess.
Yeah.
I think I'm okay at karaoke. I mean, I'm not terrible. Okay, cut this whole okay part, because I know I could hear someone else and be like, Laren, you're blah, blah. Okay. I do think I'm okay at karaoke, to be honest, but I won't. Let's just cut that whole part out.
I don't think anyone's going to dispute it.
Okay, fine. Okay, let's leave it in then. Actually, I karaoke'd so much as a kid, or something like this, that I, like, learned how to read at age 5.
Whoa.
Which is kind of funny.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's a lot of fun memories I have with friends just singing karaoke in different cities. I have, like, memories of karaoke in, like, Shanghai or Tokyo or Hong Kong and Seoul. And, of course, like, the countless times in Richmond and at home as well. It's just, like, a very fun thing to do.
Yeah. It's very, very communal and, like, joyful.
Yeah.
And, like, dramatic.
Totally.
It's, like, dramatic.
You know, you can do it in a funny way. You can do it in a serious way. You can do it in a teamwork-y way.
Yeah.
And you can just, like, watch. You can just listen, you know.
Yeah.
There's always... what I actually really like at some karaoke spots, they'll have, like, egg shakers and, like, tambourines
yeah.
and stuff. And I freaking love that. But I haven't been, but I've also heard that there are some spots that have, like, full-on instruments.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I've heard. I've never experienced this, but I feel like that sounds like a lot of fun.
That's so extra. That'd be so chaotic. But
totally.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah. I actually have a kind of a funny game I made up with karaoke.
Mm-hmm. What is it?
If you play one song and then load lyrics of another song on your phone and try to do a live edit by singing the song lyrics of the other song, making sure that, you know, it's in the right key, that it fits with the other song, and singing that on top. It works better if you do, like, I guess a rap song on top of, like, any other song.
Yeah.
But it's
a blend.
It's a blend.
It's a blend.
It is. It is a live karaoke blend, and you heard it here first.
Do you have any, like, examples?
You know, actually, I have a little bit of a little story of how it came to be.
Yeah.
Like, back in, like, 2017, like, you remember when Cardi B's Bodak Yellow was, like, the hottest song, you know? Like, everybody knows the lyrics, you know? Everyone knew it. So, sometimes I'd go, and I don't know if people know me, I'm like, you know, I like all sorts of electronic music, but if it's, like, house or techno, I'm a bit more finicky in, like, what that sounds like, because, like, I find it kind of hard to dance to. Whereas, like, you know, I'm not saying I hate all of it. I'm saying, you know, as a very specific kind of, like, rhythm will move me. But to get through, you know, shows that I wasn't completely feeling, I would just, like, think of the lyrics to Bodak Yellow while I was hearing, like, whatever song it was, and I was just like, you know, this could really translate to a lot of different other things.
That's amazing.
So next time, you know, you're at a club or something and you're just not feeling it, like, try to make a blend in your head, and then maybe just it'll be interesting. That's not so out funny. Loud though.
It's like self-motivation.
Yeah, totally. It's, just extra edits on the dance floor.
Have you done it in karaoke before?
I have done this game in karaoke before, but maybe with just one other person.
Yeah, yeah.
And as, like, us kind of goofing around and playing songs and thinking of other songs to sing on top of it. But, you know, sometimes you'll hear a song and you're like, you know, this would make a really good blend with XYZ because it's in the same key or something like this.
Yeah.
I guess that's like the DJ brain side.
DJ brains. All right. All the DJs listening, you got to go out and try this when you do karaoke next.
Yes, please let me know how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, yeah, just thinking about the covers in the mix, like Miles's drum cover is like so crazy.
Oh yeah, totally.
metal over J-pop, like, yeah. I like the blending.
Totally.
Curious, just like thinking about the mix more, like how you put it together from a technical standpoint, like figuring out how to put tracks together and the order, all that stuff.
I definitely had to test to see what songs sound good together. So I'd make clumps of tracks that sounded good, that worked well when you blend them together, and then try to figure out how to slot them from there. So if this chunk and this chunk worked, maybe I can find which chunk could be like the glue in between. If you listen to the mix, you know, it's very like the way I mixed it, it's actually more of a production than like a DJ mix. So you know, sometimes I had to think of very unconventional ways to like combine the tracks together. And either it's like me cutting up a really short vocal and sprinkling it in, or I made that DJ drop, the dry duck eye, which means, oh my God, or more literally, it's like, oh, sky and earth. So I'd put that in to do like a really like abrupt cut transition.
Yeah.
But there's also some point where I had to reverse part of a song just to get back to the intro, which is like, DJ, play that music louder. Which is such a like funny line. Yeah. And fun line. But I did that because it was just like too hard to mix it into the next track. It was almost impossible.
Yeah.
And the song, it was M-Flow Loves Melody and Ryohei, Miss You. Mm-hmm. And actually, a little fun fact, but Taka from M-Flow apparently listened to the mix and enjoyed it.
What?
Huge.
I was like, wow, that is incredibly epic.
That's props to you. That's such a good mix.
I hope it was okay that I reversed it partway through.
No, it was sick. It was a very memorable transition. Does it go into... I forgot what it goes into after that. Does it go into Crystal K?
It did. Yeah, it was like the candy track.
Oh, candy. That was so epic. That was so epic.
Thank you. Another great track. I love.
Play that music louder. Onegai. Boom, clap. Boom, 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 clap. Boom, clap, boom, boom, boom. Cold crush lover is here. When you say it's flowing this year. So して朝まで in the sun window. I'm your eyes in the and I'm a side show. So I got this to stop. And I'm a side show. 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 I'm a
production than like a DJ set.
For sure.
Did you do it in like Ableton?
Yes, I did. The whole mix is done in Ableton.
Yeah.
It's more of like a collage than a proper DJ'd DJ mix.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's why it resonated with people so much is because you did it that way. You're able to put so much more in it. And then you have all these like super epic transitions that are like wouldn't be possible in the like on CDJs. So
totally.
I think it benefits for sure. Yeah, I mean it's such a special mix. Hopefully if the listeners haven't heard it, they're gonna go back and listen to it. But I'm sure like a lot of people listening in probably already know about it. So it's pretty legendary, I think.
Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity. And for letting me take a trip back in time to discuss it.
Yeah. The other thing that I wanted to get to, though, is our listeners maybe don't know that you're somewhat of a food expert. just sort of known real ones know. So you gotta share some. Do you want to talk about like? Your most recent favorite spots in Vancouver?
Okay, well, I mean, I just got back from Berlin, so I haven't exactly gotten to try anything super new at this very moment. But I'll tell you what I was craving when I got out of the plane.
Yeah. What are the first spots you gotta go back to?
You know, weirdly, I had this craving for like a Hong Kong curry bun, like a curry beef bun. It's like one of these like staple savory pastries that you can get at any like Hong Kong style bakery. But I went to Maxim inside of Metrotown Mall because I was getting my computer fixed at the time. And their curry bun, I swear, it's the best one in the city.
Whoa.
And the way they have it is there's a tiny, I don't know what it is, but it's like a little bit, has like a little line of, I don't know, it looks like custard to me, but there's like a tiny sliver of a line of custard at the top that's been like baked onto the bun. So when you bite into it, you get a little bit of the extra sweetness of that one moment mixed with like this curry beef, but it was almost like quite potato-y inside. It's kind of like when you have a yellow curry and then you mash the potato a bit into the curry sauce and it becomes like this kind of like, I don't know, kind of like a mashed curry sauce.
Yeah. I've never tried that. I gotta try
that. You gotta try that. It's great. I guess I used to do that sometimes for like Vietnamese curry soup because it's more, like I said, it's more like a soup than a curry, but it still has like the flavor of a curry. So I would like mash the potatoes to give it a little bit of thickness. But that was one of my obsessions for coming back. It's just the fluffiest bread, you know. It's like sweet, it's savory, it's a little spicy. It's great.
Did you eat anything else when you were there?
I did have a little food hack for you.
Okay, drop it.
So TNT, which is like the, it's like a massive Asian supermarket chain in Vancouver. It's kind of like if Walmart was Asian or something like this, you know.
Is that the one we went to?
I think so. It's like huge, really big one. And they have locations all over Canada. But they sell egg tarts. And for the, anyone listening who doesn't know what an egg tart is, it's like a tiny little tart, but inside is like this kind of eggy custard that's like sits inside. It's almost like flan, but a bit more eggy, I would say. But there's kind of two styles of it. One is like the Portuguese style, and one is the Hong Kong style. And the Hong Kong style is kind of a more of like a cookie crust, almost like shortbread-ish, you know? But whereas the Portuguese style is more of like a phyllo flaky pastry for the crust. And usually the tops are a little bit more burnt, just a little bit. But anyway, so they're having a sale for these Portuguese egg tarts. So I ended up getting some. But I actually usually never get them because I actually don't really like the ones that TNT makes. But anyway, got them anyway. Well, my hack for you listeners out there is if you take your egg tart, the flaky one, put it in the air fryer and put a droplet of orange blossom water at the top of where the eggy part is and then put it in the oven. Let that cook for, I don't know, 1 or 2 minutes or something like this. The pastry will be so perfectly flaky and crispy on the outside. As you eat towards the center, it will become like this refreshing orange blossom flavor that will just like really cut through that creaminess in the most delicate and beautiful way.
That's, how did you come up with this?
I don't know. I was just like, oh, well, you know, I wish it was a little bit more crispy or more flakier. And actually, you know what? The way, the reason why I came up with this is like, when I was in Berlin, there was this one Turkish pastry shop on Zonenallee, and they, there's Sorry, there's like so many on Zona Nale, but I think the one, it's called like conditional or something like this. That's the best one. But in...
You heard it here.
If you go in there and, you know, they have all sorts of stuff that's absolutely delicious, but they have like a window and there's like these little clear plastic cups with some kind of like, it looks like a pudding inside the cup. Anyway, when you have that pudding, it's almost, I don't know, the consistency, it's kind of like panna cotta, but maybe a bit more creamy. It has the most amazing orange blossom and rose water flavor to it. But what makes it the best one is that the sweetness is so delicate. Like, it's sometimes I find, you know, I'm really like sensitive to how sweet things are. But this was like the perfect level of sweetness. And actually, all the pastries in that shop are incredible.
Dang.
And so I really wanted to eat that again before I left Berlin, but I only had it once. And so this is my closest recreation of that memory, is to put a tiny bit of orange water, orange blossom water.
It's so wild because it's like, you're like, nostalgic for Berlin, and then doing this thing that's like also something that you'd be maybe like nostalgic for, like for Vancouver.
Yes,
and like put them together.
True. I definitely, you know, when I first moved to Berlin, like I was definitely making like, you know, bolo bao, these pineapple buns and like pork floss buns, because there's no bakeries there that sell that. By the way, if anybody wants to open a place in Berlin, you know, that's something that they're completely missing, and you'll probably pop off if you're the first person to do it. I swear to God.
You heard it here.
But yeah, like wherever I go, or whenever I'm making food or something like this, I'm usually trying to recreate some sort of memory or feeling of traveling, you know. And I know these days, you know, with the pandemic and everything, it's like so much harder to travel, and so you kind of have to sometimes recreate that for yourself.
Yeah, through food.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were telling me about when you were in Berlin, was it last year? That you were cooking a lot of stuff. Do you remember what kind of foods you were cooking when you're in Berlin as a way to like remember Vancouver?
Yes. For instance, I made ramen, and actually I was inspired by two different recipes online. In Berlin, they have this... they have white asparagus season, and I never eaten white asparagus before. And at the time I was watching two different YouTubers. One was like a ramen YouTuber called The Way of Ramen.
Shout out Way of Ramen.
And the other one was My Name is Endong, who's like this German guy who lives in Berlin. And he made like this German version of ramen, which is really funny because it utilized all these like different things that were specialties of Germany, which included white asparagus. And I love that idea of white asparagus being like a star in a ramen. So there was this vegan recipe on Way of Ramen that looked also really, really good. So I kind of combined these two ideas together because I wanted to do a vegan version of the asparagus ramen.
Whoa, that's advanced. Did it turn out well in the first? I feel like when I try new stuff, it doesn't necessarily like work out on the first try, you know?
Yeah, I think it did work out. It was very delicate and could have been stronger in flavor, maybe, the asparagus, but we didn't use enough asparagus, maybe.
What did you do for like the broth?
I think it was...
Or how did you incorporate the asparagus?
This was really interesting. Yeah. The way My Name is Andong used it is that he would shave all of the asparagus and then use the shavings to make the broth.
Whoa.
And you just never think of that. You just think straight into the garbage. But
yeah,
there's also another YouTuber I can't remember the name of, but he did a thing where he made a broth out of garbage. Well, not actual garbage, but like kitchen scraps, which is like, you know, the skin of garlic and onion. It's like that really thin, flimsy, you know, you always peel the first layer of onion and garlic. You know that? The translucent layer. Yeah, that translucent layer. So he took that and he made that into a vegetable broth. Here's a secret fact that a lot of people might not know. You could use watermelon rind minus the green part, just the white part, to make an amazing vegan pho.
What?
Yes.
What? That makes it... What? How? What else? What?
That's okay. Actually the
explain
ultimate
this. Explain this. Explain this. Explain this.
If you peel the green part off and then, you know, you've eaten all the red part already, there's just like that white part in between.
Okay.
That makes a great broth.
Just that alone? Or you put anything else in?
Just that. And with an onion and a daikon, I would imagine.
What?
And then spices, of course. But actually, you know what's the craziest? I would say, since we're talking about vegan food, you know what's the craziest recipe I've ever encountered? Mm-mm. Watermelon tuna.
Oh, I've heard about this. Like, wasn't it like watermelon poke or something?
Yes. There's this one chef called Shea George, and he's like a Taiwanese... Yeah. He's a Taiwanese chef who creates the most incredible vegan recipes. And he does this one where he marinates you cook the watermelon and then you marinate it. I think it's like you marinate it, you cook it, you bake it, and then you re-marinate it again. But the marination goes with, like, I think you use, like, kombu, seaweed, and, like, soy, and mirin, and some other stuff as well. But it's shocking how much it tastes like sashimi when it's cold. It does taste like, you know in poke you, like, have the marinated tuna? Yeah. It does taste like that. It's really bizarre. I mean, it's as close as you'll get to a fake tuna, and I think it's pretty good.
So you've tried it before?
I have. I've made it and tried it. It was delicious.
I can only believe it until I try it, but that sounds, like, really interesting.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, especially, like, if you're desperate, and I was desperate, for sushi, and there's, like, no raw fish, that you could find at a good price that is fresh enough for something like this, you know.
Watermelon.
Watermelon. Why not? Try it out.
Dang. Yeah, I've seen some of his food videos on Instagram. Mm. I think he was the one I saw that did the veggie scraps for broth.
Oh, well, the one I saw for veggie scraps was a different person than a...
Oh, okay.
But maybe he did it as well. I'm sure he probably did.
Yeah. Do you have any other things that you have cooked recently?
You know, I have been eating copious amounts of hot pot since I've been back.
Okay, what do you... Okay, tell us the Varen hot pot.
Okay, so... In Vancouver, we're incredibly spoiled for hot pot, okay? Because of something called the sauce station. In Vancouver, most, like, big hot pot chains that come from China have these, like, stations where you can grab snacks and create your own sauce. And... there is this one location in particular that I love for hot pot. Well, for the very certain style of hot pot, but like, it's called Yushang Hot Pot. It's Chinese hot pot located on like West Broadway. I swear I'm not sponsored. But anyway, the reason why they're so good is not only do they have, like, the sauce station, everybody has a sauce station, but they have some rare sauces as well. Like, this is not common. Well, at least for all the spots I've been to. Red fermented bean curd.
Ooh.
That is not, I mean, it is a common hot pot item, but not every hot pot spot in Vancouver has it. Yushang has it. But the other thing that they have, which makes it so amazing, is on top of the desk where all the sauces are, they have these miniature recipe cards for you to make your own sauce depending on the region and the place.
Whoa.
So you can just pick one of those and make it accordingly to what they suggest. But the style that I really like is like the Northern Chinese style that uses that special red fermented bean curd. And I think the combination is something like, it's fermented bean curd with sesame paste, with chopped onions, green onions, chopped green onions, chopped cilantro, and a tiny bit of MSG, a tiny bit of sugar, salt, and sesame oil. There's no soy sauce in it, and there's no vinegar in it, but the sauce is particularly special.
So is it kind of thick then?
Yes, it's thick. And the way I would eat it, do not mix it. That way, do not mix it, because that way when you dip it, you got like each corner touching everything different. So when you eat it, it has like, it mixes in your mouth, and that the flavor is like, you can have it individually while together. It's like a nicer experience.
What kind of toppings do they have for hot pot? Like what do you dip into the sauce usually?
So there's other versions of sauces that are like, okay, you put, you know, a little bit of soy sauce, a little bit of vinegar, and then it's like chili oil. I mean, not chili oil. Oh, yeah. Chili oil, but mostly sesame oil. So, like, you have, like, these sesame oil dips with, of course, like, chopped greens, like the cilantro, onions, and stuff.
The classic.
Yeah, but then you can also do, like, a more, like, Hong Kong style, which is kind of like hoisin sauce with peanut butter or sesame paste and chopped garlic and I can't remember the recipes exactly, but this is like roughly what
they are. There's so many options.
There really is so many options. And when you go to this place, you'll see all these little cards. And you know, I've been meaning I should just take a photo of every single one so I could try all the different sauces. But when I do it at home, I do that. Okay. I do have like a sauce station. Like, I make sure to have, like, all these different things. Like, my pantry will have, you know, black vinegar, two kinds of soy sauce, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, one's like a Japanese-style soy sauce, and one's like the Lee Kum Kee premium soy sauce, which is more like Hong Kong-style. Uh-huh. And then sesame oil is a must.
Yeah.
Peanut butter mixed with water. So if you're making a peanut butter sauce, you have to mix it with cold water and like mix it till the peanut butter turns a little bit white, and you just keep adding little bits of water until you get the right consistency. And then that's like put on the side, and you do the same with this roasted sesame paste. You mix it with like cold water and mix it until it becomes whitish. And so there's that as well. You got chopped onions, green onions, that is, cilantro, chopped chilies, garlic, pressed garlic, ginger, sugar, salt.
You got chili MSG. Oil?
Chili oil, I always make it myself, so you'll have chili oil.
Homemade.
I just, you know, people really love that Lao Gan Ma, but I'm not a fan.
Ooh. Hot take.
You know, I used to love it, but I don't know. The recent one I got, it was so bad. I was like, I can't have this anymore. But I don't know. There's this one.
Once you make your own, though, I feel like once you make your own.
It's true. And, like, it's actually quite easy to make your own. And it's also the combination of, like, the different spices, because depending on how you make it can create such a different flavor. But my favorite flavor, which is based off of one of my favorite Xi'an restaurants in Vancouver, which is called Jujak. I swear to God, the special ingredient is cinnamon. You would have never guessed.
Cinnamon?
Yes, cinnamon.
In chili oil?
Yes. If you're looking for like the Xi'an style. I swear to God, that's the recipe, because I've been always trying to recreate that particular one, because it's like my favorite chili oil in the city. I don't know what they put in that. It's so good. But I swear it's that. Of course, a little bit of sugar, salt, MSG go a long way in a chili oil. You would never think that. You never think to put that in. But yeah, it goes in there too.
The hacks.
Sorry, I could go on forever and ever.
No, we love it. Yeah, well, it's been lovely to chat, especially the food, all the food hacks. Aaron could go on forever. I've witnessed them go on forever about food, but
yes.
you'll have to talk to them on your own to get the real insights, the real TED Talks.
Yes, for sure. Next time we'll talk about bubble tea again.
Oh, we haven't even talked about bubble tea. Yeah, well, thanks for joining us on the pod.
Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to Smoking Section, podcast by Eternal Dragons. Thanks for joining us. You can find EXO on Bandcamp and SoundCloud at x-o-xio, and then on Instagram at varinx.io. And make sure to check out their new album, Chaos Butterfly, on Precious Metals. Super, super excited for that. I got to listen to it a bit in the developing stages, and it's really exciting. And then for Eternal Dragons, you can find us on Bandcamp, SoundCloud, Instagram, Twitter, at Eternal Dragons, with a Z at the end. So, yeah, thanks for listening.
Thanks, everyone.
Eternal Dragons.